Radio Chelly Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
Is it May 10th, 2023, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar? It appears to be. Anyway, Woden's Day, Wednesday, the middle of the week. Yes, indeed. And this is the show you were looking for. How do I know it? Because you're hearing me babble right now. We are going for an odd time period. If you're listening on the live stream, you know it. If not, you don't care because it's a podcast. Welcome to it, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are. Charlie Robinson, the guy behind Macroaggressions. Yes, indeed. I think he's the only guy with Macroaggressions as a podcast name. I mean, there's a billion podcasts out there now. But he's also part of the Union of the Unwanted. Let me think here for a moment. He's an author. He wrote something about the octopus. No, he's not Danny Castellaro, but he did write something about the global control system. Matter of fact, you got a radio show on, I don't know how long you've had it for, but we did discuss it before we went to air on TNT radio as well. So, Charlie, before we even get into some conversation, which people don't know this, but they will know it if they tuned into Rockfin. We've been at it for a little while already without recording directly on the regular stream. tell us about the TNT radio show, and also tell us about your writing, sir, before we go into what might be the great calamity about to befall us all.
Well, I appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Glad you're back. Normally, we're doing it on Union of the Unwanted, and I don't get to have, like, one-on-one time with you. There's too much stuff going on.
And you don't get my unorthodox obnoxiousness on Union of the Unwanted. I got to wait my turn over there, and sometimes, there's a lot of guys cooking over there. Union of the Unwanted, amazing group.
Yeah. It gives you time to come up with a real whopper. So we always know that when you're coming with some heat, for sure. Yes, a radio show on TNTRadio.live. I do it 10 a.m. to noon Saturday mornings. It's 2 hours, two interviews, one per hour. It's been fun. You know, it's live radio. And I get to do it from my house, which makes it convenient too. So I get up on Saturday morning, talk to a couple people, about whatever's going on, and then it goes out as a podcast too. So it's just another conversation that I think is hopefully worth sharing. I've had some interesting people on so far, but a lot of them are people that I've had on Macroaggressions too. So I sort of know, like, that they're talkers, you know. I know that they're not going to just give me one word answers, you know. I know that they can go. Some of them, you like just wind you wind them up and you're like, we got a commercial break, like, hang on, I gotta like cut you off, like you're on fire.
Gotcha.
So I've had to manage that, so it's been different than doing podcasting, but I like the live component of it. Yeah,
fun.
And since you mentioned the books, books are really, really hard to write.
But before we go to the book, though, real fast, TNT Radio, you know, interesting. I'm glad you got a weekend job over there.
I wish you a weekend job. I feel like it feels like a 2 hour bartending shift.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And I wish you well at it. I really do. Is it called the Charlie Robinson Show, by the way?
It is the creatively named Charlie Robinson Show. Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, you know, I briefly had the Chuck O'Chelly Show over there and lasted a hot week and one day, actually.
The same name, show name creator, I see.
Yeah,
I have.
That hot, wild, you know, absolutely on point creativity came out with the Chuck O'Chelly Show, which survived, again, a hot 8 days.
It's got to be a record.
I don't think so. I think other people have probably gotten fired quicker, but, you know, I tried. And the thing is, I had a 3 hour show, you know, and I was going 5 days a week, or at least I was supposed to. And, that's the way that went, but it's gone now. Anyway, no shade on you or anything, but I do wish you, quite a bit of luck, no matter what you do, actually, Charlie.
I appreciate that.
Because you're a great guy.
I feel like in this alternative media world that we're in, you know, that it's a better strategy to be collaborators than competitors.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
But friendly piece of advice, though. I got to get this in. Friendly piece of advice. Yeah. No matter what you do, do not put me on your guest list over there. I mean, even if you do have an inkling that you got some crazy idea, because I'm apparently
I'll make a note of it so that it doesn't get weird. I'll be like, isn't that the world record holder? Chuck Ochelli, I think I know that name somewhere. He's so banned.
No, they're not going to let me. As a matter of fact, another host tried to book me over there, and they scuttled that right in the butt immediately because there was no way. They were like, yeah, you can't have him on. So I'm just letting you know, I'm one of those guys who is on the list.
You're too hot for radio.
Well, not too hot for radio. Matter of fact, there's going to be a big announcement coming up. I'm going to be on a pretty large radio show as a guest pretty soon.
Nice.
But not really privy to share that at the moment, and I shouldn't have blurted that out, but what the hell, it's my show, I can do what I want. You know, so it's coming. There's going to be some interesting times for me on AM and FM again. And I have been on AM and FM radio in more than one country. But, you know, what the hell? I wish you luck over there, down under.
Thank you.
And, no matter what they think of me, I think the world of you. So why?
I appreciate that, Chuck. Thank you so much.
Why do I think the world of you? Well, let's get into it. Not only are you a, master podcaster, okay, and we could rhyme some other things in there, but let's not do it. I mean, look, plaster's a word. Come on.
I was a Kiss fan.
That too. Plastic. Okay. I'm not doing that. No, my voice is still wrecked from earlier issues. But, okay, let's get into tell people just in short about your book real fast. I mean, anybody who's listening to my show is probably familiar with you already and your book, the main book that I love the color scheme on, by the way. It's very, very striking.
Octopus book.
Yes, absolutely.
I've got, I'll hold it up for those watching.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you look at the cartoonish octopus logo, it's been recolored in red, white, and blue with stars, on the suckers. But that original octopus around the world, that's actually a real image that the National Reconnaissance Office used, NROL-39,
yes,
on a spy satellite that they launched to do God knows what, except instead of saying the octopus of global control around it, instead what it said was nothing is beyond our reach.
Nice. You know what? And I want to also just comment, real fair of you to bring up visual elements on the Blind Guys radio show. Thank you.
Sorry.
So I couldn't see what you were holding up, but hopefully the audience did. No, I'm just messing with you, Charlie. Come on, man. We got to have fun with this. We have to. And why? Because, and by the way, I endorse Charlie's book. I have a digital copy of it. Are there physical copies?
And it's a fun book, too.
Are there physical?
For as crazy as it is, it's got some really, like, hardcore funny parts in it where you just have to, laugh at the absurdity of all of this stuff from time to time. You know, it's not to say that you're not taking it seriously. It's just like at some point you just go, really? Like, you guys have come up with this many ways to screw us over as humanity? Like, you're very, you know, you almost have to, like, laugh at how preposterous things have gotten. And the Octopus book is 540 pages. But the format of it is unique in that I've got 700 quotes from 500 different people,
right,
that had a front row seat to history, or, you know, that had some stake in it, or some were decision makers. So the Clintons and Bushes and Obamas and Rothschilds and Rockefellers and all those quotes are in there too, you know, as you would expect, but also like George Carlin and Bill Hicks and Joe Rogan and guys that can see this madness from a different angle and can kind of mock it. So, like, when you read the book, it's this thick book, but you go through it so quick because you're just, you read a quote that takes up half the page, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, I never knew David Rockefeller said that. It's like, about the world government and admitting that they want to have a world government. Yeah. It's on page 405 of his autobiography. Like, that's where it is for you to admit.
Right. No. And you know what I would love for you to do is if ever you need some unique quotes for.
What was that?
Sorry. What did I cut out there for a second? Am I still with you? Are you there?
Are you there?
You gotta love the immersive, you know, the immersive theater of the absurd that that comes together right then and there and clips me out somehow. You know,
don't worry about it. He's getting some more tea. And sorry, everybody, this is Nature Boy. This is a little glimpse behind the scenes on what you do with live radio. So, everybody out there listening live, enjoy this little segment.
Absolutely. As always, so I'm still running live. And so everybody got to hear that, and it continues to roll with the audio over here. So Charlie has stepped away from the mic. But what I wanted to say is that, quite frankly, yeah, it is a uniquely, you know, a uniquely constructed book, and does have a fascinating sort of mixture of things where you have certain references in there that give them all these quotes. And like I said, it creates this sort of diverse, immersive experience when it comes to the theater of the absurd, of the global collective effect that is occurring. Now, I'm going to wind up getting into things with Charlie here very shortly regarding the financial aspect of this. What is it that we're being confronted with on a daily basis? What is the constant right now? What is the absolutely reliable factor that is at play when it comes to your reality and all the things that you've got to deal with? Well, it is the financial element. So with that, I'm going to pop a little break on and see what happens. Hopefully we'll maintain connection and all that. And the Ocelli Effect will continue.
Listening to Get Mad with Chris Graves. Be heard on Get Mad or any other show on Ocelli.com Radio.
For as little as $50 a month, you can buy an ad for your business, podcast, book, or any message you want heard on one or more of the Ocelli.com shows. To find out more, contact ads at Ocelli.com. That's ADS at Ocelli.com. Be heard with us. Revelation through conversation.
Well, it's about goddamn time they wake up. Hell, I've been talking about this since 1959, about the corruption, the incredible lies, deception of the entire superstructure of Western civilization, and the incredible treason, lunacy, lies, deception. It's just amazing how much has been done in the past 100 years to the human family.
That was Jordan Maxwell on the Ocelli Effect. For more pods with Jordan and Chuck, search Ocelli.com, along with hundreds of other shows and topics as presented by Chuck Ocelli on Ocelli.com. Thanks for listening.
Like
like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before, that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
You're listening to the Ocelli.com radio network.
To the live air at Ocelli.com, and the Ocelli Effect has returned with my guest Charlie Robinson, and we're only going to run through this for a few more minutes on the live feed, but hell with it, we're going to have an uncut video version of it on Rockfin, probably on Rumble too, we'll see about that, but definitely on Rockfin, so enjoy that, and let's get back to it and continue where we were previously interrupted. Let's see, what did they used to say? Rejoining your program already in progress. That's the way it right. sounded in the 70s on TV. Where were we? Well, when Charlie and I were discussing the octopus and the overall anti-human agenda that is, well, one of the key things to discuss and one of the key things that is affecting all of us on a daily basis, no matter who you are, unless you're, I guess if you're one of those privileged rich people, you might be able to, you know, much like Donald Jeffrey said, survival of the richest. At least that's the title of his best book. You know, here we are, unless you're one of those people where it doesn't matter. You're not really affected because what's the difference? Which is not the majority of us. Yeah. The financial situation, the impending doom, the collapse. Now, Charlie, I've heard this half of my life at least, that, you know, the dollar is going to crash, that we are in the midst of, and in the late 70s, I certainly lived through, I always forget how old you are, but I think you're about the same age as me.
I'm 50.
Okay.
Born in 72.
There you go. Yeah. Born same year. I may have had to go into the adult world a little sooner than you, possibly, but I don't know your life story. Thing is, in the late 70s, we were dealing with stagflation, and things did get rough and weird. But I don't know. This is different from then. In some ways, it's a little less punishing. It's a little more in slow motion. But we are certainly experiencing, you know, the denied recession. We're certainly experiencing the diversity of, gee, do you have the privilege to, stay and play and pay or not? We're definitely experiencing all that. Now, I don't know anybody who isn't feeling the crush. Again, I don't know a lot of rich people, so, you know, I imagine there are some that aren't. What is your viewpoint? I mean, are we really now, finally, looking at the real collapse of the monetary system? I mean, you can't tell me it's about the cashless society because, you know, spoiler alert, we're already there. But, I mean, what is your idea here about the impending doom of the financial circumstance?
So I'll tell you what's different now about what all the doomsdayers were talking about 10 years ago. And by the way, they were reasonable to think this, but,
oh yeah.
Back then, I mean, the dollar has never been in good shape. It's a disaster. It's, you know, funny money. It's fiat garbage. But so they were right to think that it should be ending. But there's always some new trick. There's always some new trick up their sleeve. Quantitative easing, whatever they call it. Oh, there's a pandemic. We're going to print $8 trillion. We're going to give it all out to people. You know, whatever. There's a bunch of ways to disguise it. But what's different this time around, what really makes it seem like the system is about to collapse is the de-dollarization component to it. That there was never a time when Saudi Arabia would have conversations with other countries about accepting anything other than U.S. dollars. Mm. And once that started happening, and once China, and once they put the sanctions on Russia, and Russia started having to interact with China and India more, you started to see this recognition by the rest of the world. If you get on the wrong side of the United States, they will cut you out of the SWIFT system and seize your currency, the currency that you have in this marketplace having to do with the SWIFT system that allows for liquidity.
Okay,
it was $300 billion of Russian rubles that the United States just stole, right?
Yeah, So, I get all that, but hold on a second, because here's the thing. We've been hearing about this for a decade with BRICS. We've been hearing about, you know, the petrol dollar is going to collapse. And, I mean, when you're talking about Saudi Arabia, clearly you're talking about now they're going to accept payments in something other than U.S. dollars, which was sort of part of the agreement that propped us up, allegedly, for all this time, you know, in place of the fact that it's now backed by nothing, when the Bretton Woods Agreement was finally completely dissolved in 1971 or two, you know, this was supposed to help us out and did. Indeed, it kept prices at a certain level and all that kind of stuff, gave us a controlled circumstance, allegedly. Once again, I'm not saying I understand all this. I'm just telling you what I understand. Thing is that this threat has been there all along. And I heard about BRICS, and I heard about there's going to be, you know, the golden backed this and that and the third thing. And that should have put an end to all of this discussion a decade ago already. What's really different now? I mean, the U.S. stole some money this way, that way, shuffling of different monetary devices. That's not new either. You know, none of this is new. So help me out. What's new?
What's new is that China now buys 2.5 million barrels of oil a day from Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. The United States used to.
Right.
Back in the early 70s when they made that petrodollar arrangement. They buy 400,000 barrels a day now. Mm-hmm. A huge difference. The old United States of 1971, that's China right now. They're the biggest customer. Mm-hmm. It only makes sense. So while that's even a consideration, I mean, usually that would just rightly get you invaded if you started doing that. But there appears to be more bravery on the part of a lot of these countries, or just a lack of fear, to start to de-dollarize. And as they do that, it creates a catastrophe. It creates a situation where the U.S. dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency. That something else, you know, I'll tell you a difference between 10 years ago and now is that now the BRICS countries are talking about doing their own currency. That was never discussed before, but they're talking now about creating their own currency. Not only that, they've got 8 countries that are looking to join them and another 12 that have told them that we're interested. Mm-hmm. So BRICS is growing. They're about to offer their own currency. That's going to threaten the dollar. There's going to be global implications of that with them trading with each other and not dealing with the SWIFT banking system. So I think the rest of the world saw if you get on the wrong side of the USA, they will weaponize the SWIFT system against you. So you better create a parallel system in order to do that. And China did, and India did, and Russia is kind of borrowing theirs. And then they're talking to Iran, and they're saying, hey, you're pretty good at getting around U.S. sanctions these last 40 years. How do you do it? Can you give us some tips on how to do it? And Iran's saying to Russia, yeah, it'll cost you, but sure, yeah, we'll give you some tips on how to get around U.S. sanctions. And what it's done is it's kind of working with each other, going, we may not like each other that much, but we certainly don't trust the United States. And that's a huge problem for the dollar. And if that breaks the dollar, it's hard for Americans to comprehend what that does.
Well, doesn't that logically lead, look, you and I are both well aware, we're grown people intellectually when it comes to this, okay, so we can handle the adult truth about it. And the adult truth about it is, it's not like the U.S. has never sat there with the carrot and stick over nations, you know, indiscriminately. Quite honestly, equal opportunity domination has always been in play. If you got too big of a banana crop, we're coming for you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Your sugar cane. 100%. Maybe your sugar cane, maybe your oil, maybe it's your diamonds. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
Whatever it is.
We're going to figure it out. Now, the Chinese have made a different sort of play on those resources now, and that's also in the game. The U.S., you know, look, us being pushed this way or that way, here's the ugly question, the adult question to me. Maybe I'm wrong about this. You can help me out, Charlie. But, you know, if we have the largest military on the planet, and that is one of our really cottage industries, at a certain point, carrots stick. The carrots are no longer working because you're getting them from another country. Eventually, the stick has to get used, doesn't it? Now, this isn't going to be simple proxy warfare like before. We're going to actually have to do something here if we're going to really shake it up, right? I mean, theoretically, is that not what we're looking at, Charlie, or am I overreacting exercise?
First of all, you're not overreacting. I hope you're wrong. You hope you're wrong.
Of course.
We don't want war. But here's the reality of the situation. It is very common for wars to be started as distractions and cover-up tactics for economic collapses. That's why they tend to happen real close to one another. That's my fear. Not because I think that there's a need for war. I'm anti-war. That's where I start from. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that these lunatics are so devoid of any sense of social or personal responsibility. They will never admit that their failings led to the banking collapse. They'd rather start World War III than have to answer for their banking criminality.
Mm. Well,
that's the reality.
Now, that's a historical pattern we can witness very easily because, again, 1907, if you want to go to World War I, 1907 begins the process there because we had a, and nobody talks about it, by the way. Nobody recognizes it because they talk about the stock market crash in the 30s. But in 1907, that started the process that led to the inevitable need for World War I. World War II, if you take a look about 5 years previous to the beginnings, okay, which is a whole questionable thing. But if you really drag it back, there's about a 5 year incubation period, usually, from the economic circumstance being in such a, okay, where is our marker here? Where is our, now 5 years COVID. Later, they got to go to war to fix it. Started with COVID.
That's our 1933, Hitler comes to power, you know,
1939. Five, 6 year, okay.
World War II kicks off. That 6 year gap, for sure. And here's the thing about it: it will appear so obvious in retrospect. Once we get 20 years down the line, we'll look back on it and say, "Of course, that was what was going to happen."
Mm-hmm.
Because we're in the present, we can't see. You know, it's hard to imagine. Nice. You're going to really start World War III over some bullshit? Like over some, to cover up a banking collapse, to cover up derivatives, to cover up the fact that you're going to go to war with China to prove who's got the bigger dick? Are we accomplishing a million things, agendas all at once? You know, that's my fear too, is that in war, in economic collapse, you get the biggest opportunities for massive change.
Yes.
And what do they want? They want the Great Reset. They want Agenda 2030. They've got a benchmark time, right? So if you go 2020 to 2030, you know, that's 10 years. I don't have the script.
I got you.
But I'm sure these lunatics have.
Right.
I don't have the script, so I don't know when. I don't know the year that it kicks off.
Right.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. It incubates, and then you get into this thing that Berwick and I talked about, in the Controlled Demolition book called Thucydides Trap. It's a Greek philosophy concept. Mm-hmm. It's that the rise of a new power threatens the existing superpower.
Right.
And as the new power rises and matches or eventually surpasses in terms of however they're measured.
The spheres of influence,
however you measure which one is the newcomer that's finally passing it. It's happened 16 different times in our recorded history. Right. And in 12 of the 16 times, it led to war between the two of them. That's the United States and China, right? So we don't have statistics on our side, which is not promising.
I understand
and we
that.
We do have lunatics running the asylum, and that's not promising. And we know that there's no line these people won't cross. You think they wouldn't start a war to cover up their state?
No pushback from me about that. I actually have
like optimistic, man.
I want to be optimistic too. But it's sad to me that we're at a point of requiring optimism that says I hope it's more like a 9/11 type paradigm, because that at the very least was a limited engagement in order to reset the nonsense that had occurred after the financial robbery that occurred. Yeah, but that allowed it to get done. The simple, the war on terror allowed for enough of a pressure release so that we didn't have to have the global conflict. I know that's a weird sort of paradigm flip I just did compared to what we usually talk about, but isn't that the truth? That at certain points you can do a limited engagement. Like very much they slowed down the African Union issue by doing what? Making sure that Gaddafi no longer held the position he had, where he was offering interest-free loans to other African nations, right? This is how we put a stop to that. But 9/11 was one of those things where they were able to accomplish a multi-pronged agenda. Okay, and I'm not even talking about, let's not even go into the conspiracy, not theory. Let's not even go into that. Let's go into just what it accomplished, which was a lot of resets.
So many things.
But couldn't they do something that's a limited engagement like that? Or do you foresee a global, it's just time for that once again, that we need
here's my made-up fake scenario that I could totally see happening in the future as a reason to kind of clamp down on us.
Okay, the Charlie Robinson theory of the next...
Here's the
Patriot
Act. Calling the theory.
Okay.
There will be some horrible shooting that will actually happen in a public place. And you'll just add on all of the sort of adjectives to him. He'll be like white, nationalist, AR-15, chat room, whatever it would be, right?
We got those every week. What's special about this one?
The narrative will be that this guy had been talking about how he was going to go into this, you name the place, church, school, mall, grocery store, whatever.
Okay.
And he was talking about how he was going to do this, and he was telling everybody his plan online.
Okay.
But we didn't know who he was because he was using a VPN. Mm-hmm. And if only there had been laws in place to make sure that these criminals couldn't hide behind their lack of identity online, we would have been able to stop this mass shooting, this fake mass shooting that I'm inventing for the purposes of this sort of point I'm making. Then the response, this is the problem reaction solution concept. So the problem is this mass shooting that took place by a radicalized white Christian nationalist lunatic, whatever, anti-trans, anti-everything guy who was bragging about it on Reddit in advance and Telegram and Facebook and Twitter and blah, blah, blah.
No, hey, look, customize it according to whatever it is your anti-agenda is that day. Obviously, whatever your outrage point is, go for it. Right. Go ahead.
The only solution is an internet ID card.
Internet
with your
ID.
Biometrics and your name and who you are and we've got your IP address and you can't use the VPN or you go to prison for 250 years or whatever the thing is that they're doing. So like I can see a problem reaction solution internet false flag that is the pretext for the internet ID card, where they do whatever they can, because they've shown us they're terrified about anonymity online. They've explained that the FBI is like, they don't want you using VPNs. They're trying to pass this Restrict Act nonsense, and you know, to limit your usage and everything like that. So we know they're going that direction, and so that's my prediction.
Which is full speed stupid, by the way. And I'm not calling you stupid, Charlie. Hang on, in case anybody thinks I'm calling Charlie full speed stupid. I'm saying that entire concept is idiocy. And why? Not because Charlie said it or laid it out. But here's the thing. If you think for a moment, and I don't mean you again, Charlie, I do mean those listening. You guys, if you think for a moment that it is not already in their hands, if there is any illusion of privacy, I'm here to tell you, it's exactly that. It's an illusion. You are easily tracked. You are easily traced. Your biometrics, oh, if I don't give them my DNA, they don't need it. It's already there. Now, what they need is the excuse to now roll it out publicly and say, we have it. But the idea that we're going to stop them from being able to snoop, sneak, know everything, you think you're having private conversations, anything that you think is being done privately, forget it.
We got to go back to the old school mafioso type and write it on flash paper. Notes to each other. Hand it to them.
You got it. That's it. And then you better get yourself inside of a Faraday cage, okay?
Right.
And
make sure they're not reading your mind, too. There's not, because I think Facebook's doing that these days.
Faraday cage, telling you. Faraday cage, be sure that there is no electricity.
Just to make sure.
Why not? Let's add it all. Otherwise, guess what? There is no escaping this. If you're anywhere near civilization, there's no escaping this. You're at all times being monitored. Not by one facility, not by one great master.
Everybody.
It is an interlocking system that they have brought people into voluntarily, entirely. I mean, people are going to tell you where they are every minute of the damn day on the social media, sure, but also their phone tracks them, their bosses track them, everything that you own that has an electronic component tracks you, traces you. Where is the escape from the grid, Charlie? It's not there. So here's the thing. They have all of the access. We're not going to stop that. It's already there. What can we do about it? I'm actually not sure. But the funny thing to me is that we need to stop it. We need to make sure that they're not monitoring us. And because I happen to not go to a certain store and I don't use one of those cards, I don't even know if they use the cards anymore for, you know, your customer discounts. But because I don't use one of those, I'm not being tracked or traced. Then you don't understand this. You have a biometric signature. It's known. Your DNA, I didn't give them my DNA. Well, somebody probably did who's related to you. You can extrapolate it. Done. The database is already there.
Now, we're really at a severe disadvantage.
Severe disadvantage, right? It's like, you know, people who complain about the cashless system, it cracks me up. Most of this money that they say.
For a while.
Well, but the thing is, they say, okay, there's this much that's actually been printed out there. It doesn't exist anyway, physically, literally. It doesn't exist.
It's like 94% digital or something like
that. Yeah, which means what? That it doesn't matter. And people go, what about the dollar versus this?
It's just a computer.
It's just a matter of data entry and a metric that tells you that this is worth this. That's it. And it's data entry points. So cashless society, good luck. Already here. My point about this, though, is that now what is it that we're going to be able to do? Try and keep them from tightening the choker leash? I mean, because
that's the problem, is the social credit component of this and how that becomes normalized, how people that don't understand the bigger game say, oh, well, it's okay if we, you know, add this one little piece to the electronic digital prison wall. You know, I'm just going to put this one brick here. But, like, before long, like, you've built, you know, it's too late.
Look, I'm trying to do this in the most unorthodox fashion I can, but I gotta throw this out there, man. And remember, Charlie, I love you, man. You are my brother, so this is not hostility. Okay, just please understand, this is not hostility for you. I got plenty of hostility for a lot of other people, but not for you. I got to ask this question, and it hurts me to ask it. Okay. In the circumstance that we're in, right, what is it that we're supposed to do about this? That's question one. Believe me, this is the slow roll, okay? But I want to know something. Like, okay, we understand the circumstance we're in. We understand the direction we're going in. What is it that we could possibly suggest to anyone to resist this? I mean, there's 100 things you could do to try and extract yourself from the system. There's 100 things that, you could say about this and that, and how we could examine and really prognosticate and pick up on what's happening. So let me ask the ugly particular. All right. You're talking about a mass shooting event. It seems to me like those are happening every day. I'm starting to confuse the mass casualty events. The other day, I almost thought the Nazi guy was the one who drove over people, and actually it turned out that that wasn't the Nazi guy. The guy with the fresh swastika tattoo actually took shots at people. I was mixing up my mass casualty events as I was picking them up in my news stream, right?
It's understandable.
Because I was a little tired, and it's overlapping. It's... So, to me, a mass casualty event, a shooter, white nationalist supremacist, all this, I don't think that's even relevant anymore. I think they have to introduce something new into this equation, and this is the thing I'm having trouble imagining. And I'm wondering, you know, you're a smarter guy than me. Maybe you're ahead of me.
That's debatable.
No debate as far as I'm concerned. I won't debate you on it. You're a smarter guy than me, so I turn to you and I say, Charlie, what is the thing that they're going to do that's going to have to amp this up? Because people are numb. People are numb. You're numb for 100 reasons. We could go over it, and it's not just because you willfully decided to go get yourself some fentanyl. No. You're numb for a reason. You're numb because that's the way, if you're engaged, you become numb. If you're engaged in the world around you, you're becoming numb. And to me, it's like it's almost becoming a blur, the mass casualty events. I care about people. I love people. I hate the fact that there was a guy shot at a traffic light 2 blocks from where I'm sitting the other day. Just shot in the head. Nobody can figure out why. Okay. But everybody seems to be numb from this. What is going to be the thing that shakes them up? 9/11, like I said, a collective event. We could talk about that, how that changed the psychology. COVID certainly had its effects. I was trying to explain to somebody the other day that even if you weren't in a place where things were locked down, even if your business wasn't put out, even if you did keep part of your job, okay, post-COVID, during COVID, everybody was psychologically affected because of the resonant effect on the entirety of the population. There are people now that don't want to step outside of their houses at all because they're engaged in fear. Because why? That was the intent here. You're supposed to be afraid. You're supposed to be terrified of the invisible enemy, the others, the people that don't want to get the vaccine, etc., etc. Okay. What is the big horror that they could possibly dump on us now that actually affects everybody significantly enough so that it gets past the numbness? And that's my final question for you and me tonight.
You answered it. You said it. I don't have the specific answer what it will be, but you gave the answer, an invisible enemy. It'll be another invisible enemy. Just like COVID, just like terrorists, just like, you know what I mean? Just like commies.
Terrorists, communists. They don't have enough serial killers. They don't have enough serial killers to go around anymore. But yeah, terrorists, communists, pinkos, whatever, man, they're all coming for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be an invisible enemy that the media will conspire with the governments to drive home a message of fear, to get you to operate in your outside of your own best self-interest, to get you down into a fight-or-flight mentality so that you make short-term decisions. I think it's important for people to get a realistic understanding of the relationship that your government has for you. Because until you have a healthy understanding of how your government looks at you, you'll never really truly understand how the world works. Your government, if you live in America, your government and your media, they hate your guts. They despise you. They have zero respect for you. They think that their job would be so much easier if we weren't taking up space on their planet. That is how they feel about us. And when you understand that that's how they feel about us, then a lot of this stuff starts to make more sense. You know, if you have a relationship with the government, like, oh, daddy, government's going to take care of me. That's delusional thinking. You know, and we've got to get honest. If we're going to stand a chance, we got to get honest about things. And that government is not your friend. And I know I sound like I'm speaking at an Acapulco, but again, like it's just, how many times do you need to see over and over and over again what the government does to people that have a voice that come out against a certain thing? John Lennon or Bob Marley or you name it, man. There's a bunch of people. Whenever Tupac, you can throw him probably in the mix, whatever.
Absolutely.
Whenever you start to have a different idea that goes against, they will wipe you out because they hate your guts and they have no respect for you. And so I think that's where I come from. That's my starting position when dealing with the government, is understanding that there's no love here. This is some sort of business transaction I have with the government, and I'm going to make it as quick and as effortless and get away from them to the extent that I can. And that's my relationship with government. So like, I love Americans, the people in America. I mean, not all of them, of course, because some of them are awful, but many of them, we can hang out, we can have a good time. I don't consider the American people to be the reason for all this insanity. I want to be very clear that it is the government of America that's doing this, which is a whole nother world.
Well, look, they may not be the reason for it, Charlie, but they got to take responsibility, and their first and key priority when taking responsibility is as follows. You cannot embrace fear. How is it that people can go and see you? Centralized place for Charlie Robinson. Give us one-stop shop. Where should they go? We mentioned macroaggressions. We mentioned that you're an author. You can get all this stuff. The Charlie Robinson Show on TNT Radio. We mentioned all of that. Union of the Unwanted. Where is the central starting place to go and follow you instead of embracing fear, brother?
TheOctopusOfGlobalControl.com is the website. That's the best place for people to go. They can find it.
The Octopus.
Thanks for having me. I always appreciate our chats.
Thank you. TheOctopusOfGlobalControl.com. Is that right?
That's right.
There you go. Charlie Robinson. The Ocelli Effect is done. No matter who you are, where you are, when you are, I'm merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely, man to man. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.